Hello everyone, my name is Jen Torres and I am a God, and so are you. Like many of you, I was raised to believe that if I just prayed hard enough, God would save me. As it turns out, that was actually true. I saved me. At the age of 15, I became pregnant with a beautiful baby girl who dropped in just in time to save my miserable life. This was my first awakening. This podcast is about all of the words and listening to those words to begin to envision what is possible. Because sometimes, as individuals, we feel we need to know everything, have it all together, and be everything all of the time. But that's why we live in a world filled with other people. Each person holds a piece of the puzzle. It's about being open to new information, new ideas, and new perspectives. We're going to talk about all of the topics surrounding what it takes for you to step into your God-Goddess journey with me as we uncover all things living self-actualized and in your inherent divine God state. This podcast is about doing whatever it takes to develop and nourish the God in you. I am beyond excited to introduce our next guest, Chris Olivas. She is a wonderful woman who I have been friends with for many, many years. She's also a psychedelic integrative coach. So I'm really excited to bring her on to talk about her experiences with plant medicine and the way that she found her journey to plant medicine was actually through healing her own autoimmune disorder, in which she was experiencing severe fatigue and cognitive imbalances. So it's awesome to talk to her and just understand how she was called onto this path through this series of synchronicities in which she was called to the jungles of Peru and actually eventually started to assist people in blending her personal practices and helping other people to transition out of their own dark night of the soul. She is awesome. I can't wait to introduce her and have her on. She is one of the most compassionate people I know. She's wise, and I love her process in working with her clients and helping them to understand the sacredness of the plant medicine and the animals, and finally, ultimately, to help them to integrate their experiences into their daily life. She also has a private practice in which she now incorporates a blend of psychotherapy, inner child work, sound, and energy healing techniques into this holistic and spiritual guided approach that she's now helped hundreds of people to move out of that dark night, out of old belief systems, clearing those blocks and into their true authentic self. So without further ado, let's jump right into this interview with Chris Olivas. Oh, hello everyone, and welcome to another brand new episode of the She's a God podcast. So as you all have heard in the introduction, I have a good friend with me here today, Chris Olivas, who I met many moons ago in a beautiful container coven. And we've been friends ever since, just like hitting the globe sometimes together. It's very interesting how that happens, but it's just really fun to catch up with her and see how she's doing. And every time I talk to her, she's a 1-3 in human design. And so every time I talk to her, I'm always fascinated with the new things that she's discovered, with her one line being that investigator and just being somebody who's always kind of got her finger on the pulse of like the new interesting things that are happening in the world. So she has layers and layers of information for us today. And like I mentioned, I'm huge on all of the therapies. And I think that right now, as we'll get into it in just a moment, but right now we're going through a huge shift on the planet. And so we need all of the bells and the whistles. And so Chris has layers of knowledge as well as years and years and years in her practice and doing what she does. So Chris, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. And thanks for that introduction. I forgot I was a 1-3, so that's pretty cool.
Yes. Yeah. I love 1-3s. A famous 1-3 is Princess Diana. Yeah. And then also another 1-3 is Goop, Gwyneth Paltrow. I think Trump is a 1-3.
although I don't, he might be a 3-5, but yeah. So there's a lot of amazing people out in the world who have this profile, which, I mean, the profile is awesome. You know, it's people who do it both. And anybody who knows the 1-3, it's the establisher of truth and knowledge, meaning these are people who love to investigate and study, and they have done it themselves. The 3 line is the experimenter, and they will get their hands dirty and put their hands on all the things and actually try it themselves, which I know Chris has tried a lot of her own practices that she does too. So Chris, I'm excited to get into this topic today.
Yep, let's do it.
I know. It's like, it's so, so juicy. So before we get started with like all of the things, can you maybe share just a little bit about like your background and your upbringing, just so people kind of get an idea of who you are?
Oh gosh, where do we start? I've had like 5 different lives in this one lifetime, like just in almost like my beginning years is almost like a movie. That an old movie I've watched. But I would say that in my 40s, at about 40, I went back to school and I ended up going and getting my master's in marriage and family therapy, which turned out to be exactly what I needed to do. And so that took me on to work as an intern with foster kids. So I started getting introduced to trauma with children who were born in traumatic environments. And I then went on to do couples therapy. And that was also based in a particular modality based on attachment, which can be affected by trauma. So again, here was this theme showing up. And then when I started to really try to do my own shadow work, do my own work as I'm going through the process of becoming a therapist, I started to find out about these different techniques. So some of the techniques I use are energy psychology techniques that allow me to release energy around thoughts, beliefs, and stored energy in your body. So that was where I was at when I got really sick in 2016, diagnosed as an eczema condition, but it was much worse than that. It was cognitively affecting me, which made it difficult, of course, to do my job. And it was incredibly painful. So my hands were so swollen and I couldn't close them. They were cut and water felt like acid on my hands. And the doctors basically couldn't help me. And I was a director of a center here in Oceanside, California, and I was doing my thing. And at the same time, I was losing my own desire to live because this was the life they said I was going to have. And then through these synchronicities, I ended up meeting a shaman who invited me to go to Peru to work with her shaman, because I showed her my hands and I just said, "This, I don't know what to do." And that was where I got introduced to ayahuasca. And I was there 10 days in the jungle outside of Iquitos, Peru, and I did 6 ceremonies. And a lot of times people think, well, what's that got to do with a skin condition? But it was layers and layers of ancestral trauma that I was healing. And so I went through journey after journey healing these traumas through my mother and some of my father's at that time. Later on, I would do ayahuasca in other settings, and I would do some work on my father's line. So this ancestral trauma I was holding in my body, and I had chosen as a soul to drop in to heal that for my family line. That is kind of what set me up to have an understanding of the power of working with Mother Earth's. Really, when you think about it, plants are put on this earth to help humanity. You know, all the foods, they say food is nutrition, right? That nutrition is your medicine. And so these psychedelic plants are another form of God consciousness gifting us for a way to break through the veil. And so that was when that started to open up. And not only did I get an understanding of plant medicine and the psychedelic plant medicine, but I also began to shift. And so that took me into another phase of my life where opening up to channeling and doing high priestess work, and this things just started to open up and flow. And I met you on the trail on that part of the journey.
Yeah. And would you say that, because based off of what it sounds like, as I'm listening to you explain your journey from where you were to where you are now and how that's evolved and changed and grown and heightened, also sort of been adding new tools as you're going on, would you say that the way that you treat people in terms of your practice has evolved with your spiritual journey? Like as you're growing on your spiritual journey, you're sort of evolving into new ways of teaching or healing or giving therapy to people?
Yes, it had to. What happened was I could not not know it. And now I had learned that we have to remove the energy around the trauma. And so the trauma is really, when it's interesting, when you think about it, we can experience something that's painful. What makes it into trauma is it doesn't process. And also what creates the suffering is the story we create around the pain. And so many of us are repeating the story, which repeats the pain, and that's why we suffer. But we can't get out of the loop. And that was one of the messages on my last journey in Peru, was that, and it was interesting, they said, we did not know how difficult it would be to wake the one up. And they said that they are stuck in their thought, and the thoughts loop. And they said they must release this in order to be light. And I asked in my journey, I asked, light as a feather or light as bright? And the answer was yes. And the number one thing people say when they start to do these releasements in the work that I'm doing is they say, I feel lighter. So now my practice has really evolved from traditional talk therapy to what I call an integrative therapy, which I use psychotherapy, but I'm also integrating in emotional release, releasing of thoughts and beliefs, working with shamanic principles, working with plant medicine and plant medicine essential oils too. You know, it's something, it's all plants. Psychedelic plant medicine is the whole other topic that we're here to talk about. But there's plant medicine in terms of nutrition and food. Food is your medicine. So my practice is now there. I do parts work and inner child work, and I do shamanic journeying as well. So they kind of come in phases depending on where someone is, you know. And so when people come in with a crisis and there's a lot of pain, you know, I'll do somewhat of a family chart, and we'll start to identify what's the underlying piece that's actually pushing up, right? And most often what happens is when someone comes in crisis, or like what we call a dark night of the soul, that is actually the gift. It is what is opening up for us to move into the next, and the next in terms of higher consciousness. So plant medicine and psychedelic plant medicine actually serve as a tool to help us access higher consciousness.
Yes. And I want to say right away, I mean, Chris is the queen of essential oils. Like if you have like any questions about them, or if you are just interested, like I'm sure I'll leave some links in the show notes. But honestly, like that's one thing I'll always remember about. We actually went to both Egypt and Bali together. And that's one thing I'll always remember. You always had, like, anytime you walk into a room, the entire room smells like essential oils, and it's like engulfing you. But it's like so beautiful to realize that these plants are in everything. And it's, even though when we think plant medicine, we think ayahuasca and mushrooms and psilocybin, and we're going to talk about ibogaine in a little bit. But when you think about plant medicine, it truly is essential oils, and it truly is like the parsley that you sprinkle in your soup, and all of these beautiful ways in which the plants are working with us to heal us. So as your practice has grown and evolved over the years, and really the fact that, first, I just wanted to also say congratulations, like all of that ancestral healing that you did, so powerful. I mean, it was in the physical for you. So it's like, it was physically showing up for you, which is super interesting, and to the point where you had to go get it healed. It was like so obvious right on you. And you're like, no, like I need to go and do something. And following those synchronicities and following your spiritual guidance and going to Peru and doing the medicine. And this is the journey. This is like what we talk about on the show, about the spiritual journey and following the path. And that's what it is right there. It's following the ways in which you're being called to be healed so that you can show up in bigger and more beautiful ways for the people that you're here to heal. So when it comes to these plant medicines and the way that you use them, I listened to the interview that you sent me. And so it's just so fascinating to me that plant medicines are making their way into controlled environments in these more like therapeutic settings. So I have heard a little bit about this, but I don't know how it goes down. Like, could you just kind of explain to people, can you like paint a picture of what it looks like for somebody to go into like a controlled environment with a trained, what would you even call it, a plant medicine therapist?
A lot of times we'll say coaches, an integrative psychedelic integrative coach might be a term. Coaches is typically the term, but there are different. So this is where you start to look at different plant with different ways of it being served, right? So the ones that have been made legal are not plants. So go figure, they're the pharmaceuticals. So the pharmaceuticals are actually being approved of by the FDA before plants. But psilocybin is very close. And we do have some states actually and some cities in California that have legalized like psilocybin and other entheogenic, I can't say the word, but these other types of plant medicine. But when you're talking about being assisted by, say, a psychotherapist, we might be referencing something like ketamine-assisted psychotherapy. That's approved. It's legal in the U.S. They have clinics that you can go to. You can go to therapists that have actually trained on administering that. You can receive it through an IV, or you can receive it sublingually, lozenger. You will go through a process where usually in that case, you're going to go to a therapist's office or a clinic, and you'll probably sit in a recliner chair or lay down on a couch and put on a mask. That's often that laying down with the mask or sitting up with a mask is often going to be the way that you do any journey. So gone are the days when you think of doing shrooms and it's just a fun thing and you're going out to a rave and you're having fun. That's not actually what we're talking about. We're talking about intentional connecting with what it is that you really are there to heal or to have opened up for you, maybe that sometimes life purpose, that there is something that you have an intention and that you go within. And the way that we go within is we close our eyes, because our eyes are always giving us information. Our ego wants to tell us yes, no, good, bad. So closing our eyes gives us an opportunity to stop all that and to go in. So I would say that is one thing you can expect, is you're going to lay down, like in other medicines, you're going to lay down probably in a darkened room, and you're going to maybe have an eye mask or just close your eyes. You're going to be set yourself comfortable, and you're going to ride. Some medicines go for a lot longer. So Ibogaine is one of the longer, as far as I know, the longest lasting medicine. That so you can go 12 to 24 hours in the medicine, and the medicine can also last even the next day. So Ibogaine is what we call like a master plant, in that it can actually make a difference in someone's life. Like people can come in with an addiction and walk out of one night and not have any desire whatsoever for that alcohol or plant or whatever it is. And initially that's where it started, was people were going in with heavy heroin and methamphetamine addictions, going in for one ceremony and coming out not having desire for it. And with many,
that's with the Ibogaine.
Ibogaine, yes.
Okay. Could you tell us a little bit about Ibogaine? Like what exactly is it? Like, where does it come from? How did we start using this?
Right. I don't have as much history. Fortunately, I haven't really dived into that. Ibogaine is from an African shrub, and the part of the shrub that they actually use for the medicine is the root. And we say when it's coming from the root, then we talk about being more grounded experience, maybe more physical experience. And then ayahuasca is from the vine and the bark. And so often we'll say that is like moving more into higher states, right? So that's kind of a instinctual feeling when you look at which part of the plant are you ingesting. You ingest it. Right now, company that do the coaching with does it in a capsule form. Ayahuasca, typically, they cook it down into an actual liquid and you drink the liquid. So that's where the difference are. Mushrooms can be, you could have the psilocybin as a tea. You could ingest it even into chocolates, as you know, mixed into chocolates, or you can ingest it just chewing up the plant. So
how does that work too with, like, let's say when people first come to you or to psychedelic integration coach, and how does that work with you all deciding like what type of plant medicine this person should have? Like, what is that process like?
Often what I find is people come in. So you know how we were talking about being guided and following your path? So what happens a lot, and I kind of feel this is the way to go, is that there is a calling to do the medicine. There are people who look at you and say, there is no way, I do not want to ever do that. And I say, yes, that's not for you. You don't want to ever do it. It's not for you. The people who are drawn to it just feel like they should do it. So it keeps coming through, I always say three times. It came around three times. Either you read about it, saw a podcast, somebody talked about it, like that's coming to you for a reason, then investigate it and then see how you feel. So typically people come already wanting to do it and they know what they want to do. But if they came and said, I don't know which one, I often feel like starting out with a softer journey can be very beneficial, learning to ski on two skis before you put on one ski, you know, like help yourself out here. You don't have to dive in. There are people that I work with that come into Ibogaine and they've done no other psychedelic plant. It's their first time with Ibogaine. Typically someone, if they're doing that, here's what I would say. If you've had a chronic problem, alcoholism, addiction in some form, that you've tried everything, if you have anxiety that has been your lifetime, I've met people, lifetime of anxiety, nothing's worked, you've tried everything. That usually, even if it's the first time doing Ibogaine, and I've met a couple people where I'm like, traumatic brain injury. So Stanford University just completed a study and released it this year, and they studied retired Navy SEALs, and they specifically focused on their traumatic brain injuries. And the results were, of course, what we expected. They're astonishing because this Ibogaine has a regenerative effect on the brain. And so this is kind of what's at the basis of this miraculous shift, right? The brain is actually neuroplastic and it's going to mold, and something in the process of what they're doing, and hopefully they'll do more and more research on it, helps people to shift. And one client said, it's like you get a brain reset. So going back to what you're talking about, you know, which one, I think I would really be talking with the person's, what their intention is, what is, if there's a problem, what is the level of the problem? How long have they been working on the problem? Because there still needs to be some understanding, or not as much understanding, but there should be some skill building. So you say you've done no work, no therapy, nothing, but you go and do Ibogaine. Well, you may come out of it feeling like it's done, I'm cured, but most likely you're still going to need some skill. And so either do it before or definitely do it after. A lot of people work with me after they come back from Ibogaine. And the way that Ambio does is two sessions before, two sessions after. And after the Ibogaine, they'll want to continue the work. In fact, I have a client just today was asking if he could continue because he's on a journey of healing, and that made a huge difference, but there's still some stuff to work on.
So when you say skills, are you more so speaking to like, okay, if somebody were to do the Ibogaine journey, and when you say skills, are you more so talking about like if they have meditation practice, if they're in yoga, if they're in consecutive therapy treatments, is that sort of like the skills you mean, like they need to sort of hone in on that after Ibogaine or before Ibogaine?
Yeah, before Ibogaine, definitely. So yes, start to build a practice, and then also start to understand what is the ego? What are the thoughts that you had that actually led to the problem? How did you create, what is your narrative? How did you create the problem? You know, bad things can happen to us, but really what becomes problematic is what we decide is true about ourselves. So our parents can be alcoholics and be awful to us, but that didn't mean that we're unworthy, but a child will begin to believe they're unworthy. And so that's the error that happens in childhood that sets us on a path of maybe choosing abusive partners or choosing drugs and alcohol. You know, so if you reset and you no longer have any desire for alcohol, I still believe, and this is maybe my opinion, because there are people who probably say, I didn't ever need any therapy and I'm fine. And I think that's possible, but I still believe that developing tools for resilience, for ups and downs of life. And so along with what you just said, meditation, yoga, practices like that, how to regulate your emotions, right? How to think about what's being said to you and respond when you're ready to, like these types of things that you may not have learned. And you may come back from something like Ibogaine and feel like, wow, one of the stories I have is that somebody who had a lot of anger and really irritated with people. And he said that there was something said during his journey and it was like, it's okay, or something simple like that. It's not a problem. It's okay. And every time something would happen that normally he would become very angry about, he would hear that same voice. And he would just immediately be like, oh, no worries, like that. So So there is that that can happen, but there's also people come back and they start to fall back a little bit and they start to feel that, wow, I'm starting to feel that edginess again or that irritation again. And that's why I think that there is still, I recommend still doing work if you haven't done any, to still do some work around that.
Is there a category of people you see that are drawn to certain medicines? Like, I don't know why I'm thinking like maybe certain men who have gone through, you know, I know you brought up like, I think like a Navy SEAL or a military guy or like army guys, are they more drawn to like Ibogaine? And then is there like a certain like category of people who are more so drawn to like psilocybin or LSD or ketamine or MDMA assisted therapy? Like, I'm just curious. I think about that sometimes. Like, I hear about these things and I'm like, I wonder if there's just certain people, like certain categories of traumas that get drawn to certain medicines, or if it's just random.
Well, what was interesting that happened with the Navy SEALs was, and mind you, these were largely retired because they can't, while they're active, they would lose their job. But it was, you know, when you're at that level of expertise, especially as a warrior, and you go through something that a small percentage of people on the planet go through, you bond really, really deeply with people who've gone through it with you, right? And so if you're suffering and your friend who's been suffering as well in the same way goes and does something and comes back and says, dude, you got to go do this, then that person holds a lot of weight. And so we saw a lot of guys coming in, don't know that these were the category of people, never done any work, don't know anything about it. But my buddy who I trust with my life said, and I watched him, I see him now, and he's better. He's okay. So that was bringing in that to that. And what's interesting is you talk about, you know, Navy SEAL are known as the elite and they're warriors, and they kind of just, you know, they can go towards something that for a lot of people, they can be very intimidated with Ibogaine because it can be a very, very tough journey. But in terms of who's drawn to what, I think that sometimes it has to be, like in my situation, I was through synchronicity and I just followed the trail that was being left for me. But some people might just have a good friend who is going to go do ayahuasca and they say, hey, do you want to go do this? And you get a yes. And that's how you end up doing it. So I think it's just kind of like almost like the opportunity opens and you just feel like you need to go through that. But there's different experiences. MDMA is a totally different experience than, you know, ayahuasca and ibogaine and to a large degree psilocybin. Psilocybin can be closer to MDMA, you know, so a lot of times MDMA might be paired with another one because it's a heart opener and you know, you're actually very open. And so it can be very positive. MDMA was initially back in the 60s used for trauma. And I think that one quality that would be true, it's people who are often somewhat like the adventure seekers, the people who are willing to say yes to something that there's an unknown, you know, and there's a lot of people's like, I'm never going to go do that because that's too scary. That's stepping out of the safety zone that I want to hold here, you know. And like I said, I think that we need to recognize it's not for everybody. I think there are people who are going to be called to it as a form of healing. And then there are people who will go other route to heal.
Are there certain age limits for some of these drugs or plant medicines, I should say? Are there certain requirements even for people who can do this, especially when it comes to like insurance and stuff like that?
So the only ones that insurance might cover would be ketamine that I know of. As far as I know, ketamine assisted psychotherapy is the only one that possibly your insurance might cover because the other ones are largely illegal in the US. So until, and just to qualify that, there are some states and there are some cities. So we have like three cities in California that actually legalized it. We have Colorado that legalized it. I believe Oregon, and mostly they're legalized in psilocybin. Psilocybin has come the closest after MDMA to being legalized because it's the research is being done on that more right now, or has been largely focused on that. Ayahuasca is still, I don't know if some of these places that are allowing psilocybin are okaying peyote and San Pedro, and those are cactus and southwestern medicine, and ayahuasca. That's that's something that I'm not sure of. But yeah, so basically the way the insurance okaying is not going to be really something you're looking at unless you're looking at ketamine.
Okay. So we're looking like, we're talking like out of pocket for most plant medicine journeys, with the exception of likely ketamine. So, and also too, it's like, is it a state thing, a city thing? So you're saying some cities will allow you to, you know, try these psychedelics and these journeys like this. So it's really gonna, it sounds kind of like it's a little bit of searching. Do you know of any, like, we could possibly include some links and show notes if you know any links or places people can go, like, to figure out if their state offers this, or is it just like shot in the dark, just do a Google search?
You know, a Google search will give you the list of state, you know, and you can qualify it by saying 2024, what states allow psychedelic plants medicine, and see what pops up. Last time I looked, I think Colorado and Oregon were two states. And then we had Santa Cruz, Oakland, and I forgot what the third city was in California. And then we have Washington, D.C. And, you know, like I said, so you start to look and you'll see. I think Michigan is one of them too.
Neat. Okay. Yeah, that's good to know. And what do you see in terms of like the future of this? Do you see it really kind of like blowing up and people, it becoming more of a accepted thing in the American culture?
I really see it already increasing. 2017 was when I didn't really even know what ayahuasca was. So when I went, I was just desperate to be healed. So I didn't really even research, which is unlike me. It is absolutely, and I've seen it because I'm working right now with, by the way, we've been talking about plant medicine. We also have toad medicine, which is a 5-MeO-DMT. Some people call it BUFO. It's a different type of, it's a psychedelic medicine, but it's not coming from a plant. It's coming from a toad from the Amazon forest. And so we're seeing a lot of people coming, and they're coming through podcasts like this. They're coming through. So the one that is really has people are seeing, because what will happen is when I'm working with someone, they'll tell me how they came to do this. Either one, they didn't know someone who did it and they saw the effects and they saw the results. So they made that decision, or they watched the Sean Ryan podcast, Trevor Miller, who is the person who is the director of Ambio. And we'll give that link too for people interested in ibogaine, because they put together a full retreat. So sometimes it'll be, you just go do the plant medicine and that's it, right? And ketamine, you just do the ketamine and then you go home. Ayahuasca, you might stay for the weekend. You do the ayahuasca, lasts about 7 hours. Then, you know, you stay for a couple nights and you go home. But with ibogaine, they actually, they kind of bridge the medical world. So you have to have a full medical workup by your doctor. You've got to make sure you're talking about, you know, you're physically, you need to be in shape, because it could stress your body if you have an extremely physical experience. So they have doctors on staff when you're going through ibogaine. They have you hooked up. You get an IV afterward. They're medically making sure, they're checking to make you get off medications before you go in. So that is very much, you know, they're ensuring by doing their due diligence that you're going to be, your body can take the journey is really part of it. The other medicines, they don't do that level of thing. Oh, and going back to Ambio, so then you do more than just the ibogaine. You do, they'll have like sweat lodge and ceremony and fire ceremony, and they'll have sharing groups and a full-on retreat, you know. They'll have massage and Reiki available, and then you also do 5-MeO-DMT. So that combination of working with all of those things in there helps the body release a lot. And by the body letting go, it's really a process of letting go, you know, what is not serving you anymore. So the plant medicine is identifying what the block is. In Peru, they would say limpia, which is the word clean, right? So they would say limpia. You'd ask, you know, Mama Ayahuasca to help clean, because of what is happening is you got storage that you're holding onto that needs to be let go of. So I think that with ibogaine, you're going to go through a very significant set process. But the other ones, it can be depending on where you, I would always go with somebody that's recommended, because we got people out there, they get a hold of it. They don't even know who made it. You know, we're talking like ayahuasca or even mushrooms, you know, they don't know their source. They've never really worked in it. I mean, we believe in the shamanic tradition, we believe that you have worked with this plant enough that the plant invites you to be a master, to serve. So you're because that's part of the belief is that, and this is more going the shamanic route, is that you're merging with this plant. The plant is with you. It's your ally and it's here for you. It's not doing anything to you. It's doing it for you. And so you're in gratitude as you step into the medicine, asking for clarity, for peace, for freedom. You know, so sometimes people don't, they get all these intentions set up. But I will say, you know what, the greatest intention to have is freedom. Because if you're holding all this stuff inside of you and you're anxious and depressed or in stuck in addiction, you're not free. If your mind is endlessly looping in thoughts, you're not free. And so when they say, well, if you want to set your intentions and what you're grateful to receive, it's freedom. And then the other was with that freedom is peace and joy, right? Peace and joy. I mean, gosh, with those three things, that's it. Have a planet and we've got to call it a good day.
I hold that. Yes. I love all of that. And it's so funny you said that too, because sometimes I get a little, I work myself up over my own intentions, you know, like I'll work myself up. Like, if I'm going on a retreat, what's my intention for this retreat? Or if I'm going to a Wheel of the Year ceremony or a new moon ceremony, like, what is my intention? I'm like, okay, like, what am I manifesting? But yeah, the truth is like freedom and peace and joy and like the basics are really what's going to get you everything. So it's so true for some of these deeper ceremonies when traveling and going to some of these retreats. I'm definitely interested in what you're talking about there about the retreat with you go there and they have like IVs and they test you and all that kind of stuff so that they make sure you're okay. That's like right up my alley. Like I'm much more inclined to do something like that under those circumstances than I would be to just like go into the forest and like take some stuff, you know?
Yeah. And so one of the things too, is I would say that with this work, when you come out of Ibogaine and 5-MeO, and again, along with all these other things that they're doing, one of the things that I'm seeing is, and it's incredible, like I'll give you an example. I have two different gentlemen who had vertigo. One had it for 5 years, the other one had it for 10 years, completely disabled. So we're not just talking dizzy. We're talking, you cannot walk without assistance. Couldn't drive anymore, couldn't do anything. But both of them really like great, you know what I mean? Had a really beautiful heart. But anyway, they come back from Ibogaine, and I think it's because it was a traumatic brain injury. And they said, I am cured. They told me one man was like, I'm so happy because he had a child and he wasn't able to do things with his child. And he was grateful to be, he would said, oh, yeah, I've been out there riding my bike. And so that to me is incredible. When I hear somebody suffering, especially if it's traumatic brain injury, I'm like, because, you know, you have to be careful. I'm not here, you know, here's my day job as a therapist. I have to make sure that's separate. I'm not here to talk people into doing something that's controversial. And that really needs to be made as a choice for yourself, right? So, but there's also part of me is like, oh my gosh, you really should go do this work. And then the other thing that I'm seeing is people who have had just chronic anxiety, depression, looping thoughts that come back and they're just like, yeah, you know, I'm just like not bothered by that anymore. And that's really fascinating. That's the work when they do work with me, that when we do these energy release work, that's often what'll happen after a while is they'll say, wow, I can be around my family and they don't trigger me, you know? And that's why you can do it. So I tell people who are like, I won't ever do that. That's too much. I'm like, that's okay. You know, look at this other way to do it. You know, it's this way is faster. And this way is probably the way that somebody who's in chronic addiction, another one about alcoholism, gentleman comes in, he's a fifth a day guy, you know, and he's functioning, he's successful, and he's a happy life of the party guy, but he's got a serious addiction. And afterwards, and he said, you know what? He goes, my friends drink it. They can't believe it because I was the guy, you know, who was leading the party, and they can't believe it. I don't drink. He goes, I'm sitting at the table and they're all having drinks and I have zero desire. And that's what every person says to me. No, it's not even a thought. And that's where I think that's where some receptor has been wiped clean. You know what I mean? So this, it's got to be because it's definitely been consistent in terms of what people are saying.
I love this so much because I think it's so needed, especially, you know, in this new age as we're evolving and growing in consciousness. Before we came on the podcast, Chris and I were just talking about, you know, light codes and how some days just feel like I was saying I'm like in an incubator or something where I just feel like buzzy, like, wow, like there's so much happening. I could feel it. But it's just so powerful to see things like this coming into the more of the mainstream where people can get more familiar with understanding that ketamine assistance therapies out there or Ibogaine or things like that. And so just knowing that this is out there and knowing that like people are being healed from it and it's making a positive impact on the world is everything. I love this so much. So it's great work you're doing. I know you're talking about you guys are so busy. All therapists are so busy, especially after 2020. So I just love the work you do. I love everything you got going on over there. And I find it fascinating that like you just keep going deeper and deeper into like, okay, like how else can we help people, you know, and also keeping your finger on the pulse of everything that's out there and coming through. So do you have anything like coming up or anything you're just excited about, like in the collective or within your own world?
Yeah, you know, and you're so right. Like there's always the next for me, you know, is I love what I do and there's nothing wrong, but I really love like just moving into the next. And so what's been coming up for me a lot is the empath narcissist connection and how we have so many light workers who are typically empath and they're in relationship or have been in relationship with narcissistic people. And typically it's the woman's empath, men's narcissist, only because a lot of women are waking up first, but it can absolutely be the other way around. And what I've discovered is that there is this consciousness work that you can do through the relationship while you're in the relationship or after the relationship. Because often you know, people will have suffered from like this narcissistic abuse if they're in with a real malignant narcissist, right? And so it's very painful. And so I'm doing a group starting in January. I'm going to do two groups, but one group's going to be specifically about what is a narcissist, you know, or somebody who had displays like an avoidant type of attachment style, which looks the same. And then how do you identify yourself if you're an empath? And then what is this dynamic? Why do I keep getting back into these relationships where I'm playing this out over and over and over again? And if you can lock into the lesson and not focus on this bad person did all these bad things to me and I'm the victim of it, but oh, I chose this as a soul and I'm here to actually transcend it, that's where we can level up from that relationship. Because a lot of the lesson that we're learning is self-love and trust. Most empaths know that something's wrong, but they often will bypass their intuitive nut guidance system and keep thinking, oh, but he wouldn't do that, or he's really a great guy and he does have these good sides to, you know, there's all this excuse making around it. Or through the gaslighting, they start to not know, like, maybe I am doing that, maybe I'm nuts, you know. So that's really, I feel like, coming to the surface right now, that it's the first part is just learning about this dynamic and what's going on. The second part is about, if you're a light worker, how do you consciously grow through this experience and level up? Because that's where we're at right now. Light workers are coming online. They don't know they're a light worker, but they know that they're supposed to be doing something. They're here to do something. They're different than other people. Nobody understands them in their family. You know, they're the black sheep. Talk about weird stuff. Listening to She's a God podcast. Yeah. So anyway, I'd like to invite people to go to my website. There's a link there. They can sign up and I'll take their emails and I'll set up a one-on-one call. And then we'll see which of the groups that they feel really called to be in, and then set up dates and times and all that. Cause I'm going to see where people land in terms of the dates and times that they can do. It'll be a virtual groups, you know, like 6 to 8 people in a group for, you know, intimate discussion and healing.
Yeah. Is this going to be more in January?
In January. Yes.
Perfect. I think that's perfect because now people have time to click the link, sign up, and, you know, get on the wait list for maybe to see if this is something that is of interest to you. I think it's huge. I think we need more of this, right? Within the healing community, empaths, narcissists, that whole thing is like so real. And I can't stand it. It's hard for me to watch. Like, it's so hard for me to watch when I see a disempowered empath. I'm like, oh, hell no. I almost want to like get up and like, be like, oh. But it's, you know, it's out there and it's real. And it's, the more you can identify it, bring your awareness to it, get into groups like the one Chris is creating in January, get that support, get that healing. This is how we evolve, push past it, move on, fully step into our gifts and start to show up in the way that we're here to, so that we can spread this light all over the world.
Yes, ma'am. And I do want to add one other thing about that. Part of what keeps us from healing and growing through it is silence, it's kind of like the secret. I don't want to talk about how stupid I was to put up with that for this many years, right? I don't want to tell somebody that, or my friends all saw me doing this and I feel like so ashamed because I should have known better. I felt like I felt like I should leave them, but I kept going back, like these kind of patterns. So we don't want to talk about it. So I want to create a safe place for people to come together and say, yeah, I did that. Yeah, I paid off his car loan for him, you know, like whatever it is. And that, but because we're moving up and we got to, so, and with every healing that I know, it has to do with acknowledgement. So have a safe place, acknowledge it, but learn and grow and move on to the next. And then invite in, if you're destined to be with somebody, to invite in that beautiful being.
That's going to be, that group is going to be so powerful, and it's going to bring you full circle to healing, clearing out, and then welcoming in someone new, like Chris said. So we're going to have all of the links in the show notes to everything that we've been talking about in this episode, from the Ibogaine to the therapies and the retreats that sort of assist people, and Chris's website, and the links for the beautiful group that's coming up in January, which it's perfect timing because it's like right after the holidays and now you're ready to snuggle in and into a group, whether that be virtually or in person. And that's going to feel so good. And it's going to be starting your 2025 off just right. So I'm excited for this. I can't wait to see how it unfolds. And I thank you so much for your time, because I know you guys are swamped right now. So thank you so much for taking this hour out with us and diving into all the things.
Yeah. Thank you, Jen, because you're a platform that reaches other people. And, you know, at a time right now when we don't know how to do things or where we can go, and you had this calling to make it available and say, hey, let's have a conversation so people can learn. I know there's probably more, but I feel like at least we can get them a place to go. They can contact you or me and we can get them connected with people.
Mm-hmm. All right, everyone. So thank you so much for stopping in and checking us out today. And we'll be back very soon with a brand new episode of the She's a God podcast. Sending you all so much love.
Thank you for listening to the She's a God podcast. Tune in next Thursday for a brand new episode. And don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review. I would love to hear from you. Follow me on social media at This Is Jen Torres for all of the latest. And remember, she is a God, and so are you.